We Have Issues is a weekly podcast full of reviews of comics and oversharing. We use grown-up language to make very childish jokes. You can find the show at wehaveissues.net, as well as anywhere else where average to not too bad podcasts can be found. Welcome to episode 108 of We Have Issues. We are Patreon supported. You can go to patreon.com/TOTP and give as little or as much as you want a month. That's in dollars. And if you contribute more than $2 a month, well, $2 or more a month, sorry, we do have an extra free sort of monthly podcast that my podcast spouse, James, and his daughter Scarlett do, which is normally about 15 minutes of Scarlett being delightful. And James just being grumpy old sod, really. No, he's not grumpy on those. He's generally happy because he's with his daughter. It's very cute. What else? The podcast is on Twitter at IssuesPod. I am on Twitter at NixSight, N-I-X-S-I-G-H-T. You can send me a friend request if you want to talk to me specifically, but I do tend to tweet about comic-y stuff through the Issues Pod account anyway. And there is a page on Facebook at We Have Issues. If you just search for We Have Issues, you'll find that. So, this episode's late. It's going to be low energy. I have been reading loads of comics over the last couple of weeks, it feels like. But honestly, I don't know. Those of you who are productive and creative and productive, I don't know how you do it at a time like this. If you're listening to this in the future and everything's fine and we're in this amazing utopia, then that's cool. Right now we're in this weird place where Donald Trump's just been made president and of the United States of America, and he's done all sorts of crazy shit. Well, not crazy shit, just horrible shit in his first couple of weeks. And the British government's not exactly much better at the moment and is doing everything it can to suck up to Trump too. And it's not even the horribleness that is stopping me being productive, because sometimes actually miserable times can help you make stuff. I've found them quite galvanizing in the past, I think. It's just that, it's just the weird fictionalizing or fictionalizing of everything that's going on, or that weird nature in which everything's happening. We know that the West has become more and more Islamophobic over the last 20 years. We know that it's a racist planet. Yeah, let's say it's a racist planet. We've known that the far right has been rising. It's just the thing I struggle to grapple with, or struggle to stay on top of, is the weird things everyone is saying. Like, because nobody can just own up to the horrible things they believe or the horrible things they're doing, you get press secretaries just fabricating stuff. You get presidents, like, politicians never answer questions directly. But these flights of fancy that everyone's on, it makes it very difficult to I imagine it would make it very difficult if you have much faith in reality already to keep track of reality. But for me, it's like there are these endlessly fascinating, weird, depressing things that people are doing, that people are coming out with. And it feels like there's so much to say about all of it, and so much to talk about, so many ideas in there. But I just can't keep hold of any of it. And alongside that, trying to actually get anything made or anything practical done is really, really difficult. Also, we've had a lot of trouble getting together in the studio with my local podcasting friends for this. And I think a few of the contributors are maybe struggling with one thing or another as well. So it has, there haven't been many external forces driving this towards happening, and it should happen weekly. That's the promise I've made to myself and to the listeners and to the people on the Patreon as well. But it's just everything's so weird at the moment. I don't think that's just me, is it? Everything is so weird at the moment. Related to the thing about contributors and getting these shows put together, is that you are always welcome. If there's a comic that you particularly want to talk about, that you love, that you particularly want to talk about, if you've got some audio equipment, doesn't have to be particularly complicated audio equipment. We've got people who record on their mobiles. Sorry, are we supposed to call them smartphones? I don't know. On their iPhones or whatever. You can feel free to send us in audio if you're not entirely sure what it is that that it takes to be a contributor to the show. Just drop me a message on Facebook or drop the podcast a message on Twitter. And it's always nice to have extra voices on the podcast. One of the problems, the particular problems I'm having at the moment with actually getting the show together, is that quite often it ends up with just me doing it, and I'm going through a particularly ambivalent phase when it comes to my own voice. I'm quite tired of it. I like listening to other people. I'm not that fond of listening to me. So, having said that, I've just forced you to listen to me for about 7 minutes before even really talking about comics. I should talk about comics. I have read a lot of comics in the last few weeks. I have been finding it quite difficult to formulate thoughts on a lot of them. And what's slightly weird is I've read a few issue ones, and the issue twos of those issue ones have now come out. But one comic I've been wanting to talk about for a couple of weeks, actually, is Dead Inside. It's published by Dark Horse. It had a number one a few weeks ago, and number two just came out, and I haven't had a chance to read that yet. It's written by John Arcudi with art by Tony Fezzula, I believe, and Andre May, I think, does colours on that. And it's a crime comic. It's a noir-esque comic about a female detective. Her name's Caruso, and we get a sense that in the past she has had things go pear-shaped for her with the police force, and she's been assigned to a division called the JCD, the Jail Crimes Division, which is basically a division that specifically investigates cases that happen within jails. So when an inmate kills another inmate, as happens in this story, they're the people who come in and investigate outside of the prison administration. And that's quite an interesting setup. It wasn't something I'd ever really considered before. Caruso is a really well-written protagonist. She does fit what I've come to think of as the Greg Rucker prototype. John Arcudi is perfectly capable of doing this stuff on his own. He's not derivative at all. I've always thought of him as quite a workmanlike writer, in that I believe most creators should, really. He's a writer who sort of drifts into the background so you can just pay attention to the story and the characters. And he's been doing that for decades now. Most of the time, I think, with Dark Horse. And that's the case here. Everything feels authentic. In terms of the writing, everything feels authentic. All of the characterization feels just really natural and organic. Although, of course, there are tropes in place here. Caruso, as a detective with a past, has a slightly abrasive relationship with some of the people she works with, specifically with her boss, who wants her off the case. There's a fairly typical situation or discussion here where Everyone else wants her to just drop the case because it seems cut and dried what's happened. What has happened is an inmate has been murdered incredibly violently, and the main suspect in that murder is also found dead on the same day, on the same morning. And actually, it's worth talking about that if that sounds interesting as a crime. It is. It kind of plays out quite interestingly. There's very little, it does seem very cut and dried. And it is I think the most peculiar thing that Caruso faces is the fact that, everyone wants the case to go away. Even more than you'd think would be normal in something that seems so cut and dried. But the art is, while looking similar to, you know, it evokes other artists that I've seen, it also has a real, really individual feel to it. It's really lurid at times. The, especially on the around the murder, around the violence, but all the rest of the time as well, that it's quite febrile and furtive. There are lots of, little scratchy lines, on everything to indicate sort of where wounds sink into bodies and stuff like that. It feels really gross. And it's this really weird mix of Kelly Jones, in terms of the body shapes of everyone and the compositions, and Guy Davis as relates to the inking. It's that really scratchy style to it. I liked it. I really liked the first issue. I haven't had time to read the second issue yet, unfortunately, but that is out now as well. If you can get hold of this and read it, I recommend it. From more recently, I've read the first two issues of The Hulk, the new Hulk series, starring She-Hulk, but now obviously she's the only, well, not obviously, but following the events of Civil War II, she is the only original strain of Hulk that we have. I'm basically saying that Bruce Banner's dead, in case you didn't know that yet. However, Jen Walters, has also had trauma as well, quite aside from the fact that her cousin and friend has been killed. She spent much of the last several months, I think, in a coma, also following the events of Civil War II. And so she's had a near-death experience, and that's very much, what this comic is about, really. It's written by Mariko Tamaki. I'm not sure if I've read anything by them before. And with art and color art by Nico Leon and Matt Miller, respectively. And the art is, although it's quite consistent, but the style changes quite a lot. It's almost manga influenced in that some of the facial features and stuff are much less Western, which is an interesting stylistic choice in it, but it's a really good looking book. It's really, really nice. And what it is about, and what Mariko Tamaki writes really well in this case, is that Jen, or the Hulk, she's not living as the Hulk now. She's not trying to be a superhero. She doesn't even know if she can be anymore. Her access to her powers is erratic. We don't really know much about it at the moment, but she's clearly suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think it's handled really well. I mean, I don't know a lot about it, but this, stress at her own trauma and grief at the loss of her cousin, and also the loss of, I don't know, the loss of a sense of self, because she was always the confident, happy Hulk, I guess. Just threads through this whole comic. I've seen people say that there hasn't been a lot of action in these first two issues, and there isn't really, but as a character piece, it's really, really nice. She goes back to work at the, as a lawyer. And so that's where we get the conflict, or the potential conflict, because she does take on a case which seems like it might be more complicated than she realizes it is. The firm that she works at tends to send her the weird cases we're already finding out. But the thing that really struck me about the first issue, the thing that's really impressive about the first issue, is how well the writer and artists present this character that comic readers probably know quite well, going through this complete loss of confidence, and the fact that she's scared to even leave her apartment is really well handled. The coping mechanisms she's got and how they work and how they sometimes fail is really well handled. And the supporting cast around Jen is, it's not that problem. I mean, to be honest, you're spending so much time watching this really compelling situation she's in that I don't necessarily think you notice the supporting cast that much, but they seem nice. Is what I can say at this point. I like it. I really like it. It was my favourite Marvel comic that I've read in the last few weeks anyway. What else? The other current comic that I read in the last couple of weeks that I really, really liked was God Country number one. I think that's from Image. It's written by Donny Cates with art by Jeff Shore and Jason Wordy. That doesn't seem right. Jeff Shore and Jason Wordy with, assist by John J. Hill? I'm not sure if I've got that creative team right. Those are the four people, who are working on it. I think I might have what they're all working on wrong there, though. And this is a piece of sort of, I guess, supernatural rural noir. I'm not sure exactly how you'd describe it, but it centres around the Quinlan family. At first, it seems like our protagonist, and he may still turn out to be our protagonist, is a guy called Roy, who brings his wife, Janie, and their daughter, Dina, to the small town in West Texas where I believe he grew up, so that he can look after his father, who's this old guy called Emmett, who has Alzheimer's. And it's Alzheimer's that we see him at his worst in this issue. The whole situation is introduced by Roy being called in by the local police, who are trying to turn a blind eye to Emmett's rages and symptoms, basically. But it's getting to the point where police are having to be called in to restrain him when he goes on a tear, when he's confused. During this issue, we see him threaten members of the family because he's clearly confused. And it's actually, the creative team does a really good job of just setting that scene, because it is quite heartbreaking. Roy is conflicted because his wife obviously wants to take their daughter away from this quite reasonably, but obviously Roy doesn't want to leave his father either. Thrown into this is a tornado, and then we discover that though the Quinlan Senior, Emmett, is definitely an old guy suffering from Alzheimer's, he may have something else going on as well. It would be maybe spoiling it to say much more about it than that, but it's a really interesting first issue. And even if overall I found it engaging and a little bit interesting, but I didn't fall in love with it instantly, because it seems that an awful lot of stuff's being set in small town America at the moment, this whole rural setting. I feel like I've seen a lot of this before, but it does, the situation in the final third of the book threw up one of my favourite scenes in comics in the last couple of months. Very emotional two or three panels between the daughter Dina and her grandfather Emmett that was just really effective, like art and writing and what you knew about the situation all having this accumulative effect of just being like really heartrending in a way that comics don't really impact on me that deeply that often. So much of the time I'm really paying attention to craft and stuff like that. And it is schmaltzy, but it's super effective. I don't know. The art in particular is really pretty. Pretty is probably the wrong word. It reminds me of, it's like a hybrid of Tom Coker and Sean Murphy. This almost realistic, or even like Chris Bacalo on early issues of the Shade the Changing Man, back before his style was so completely stylized, and there was still an attempt to capture almost realistic body shapes and stuff like that. It's got that sort of almost realistic but exaggerated composition and figure work and such, but it's slightly more robust than Sean Murphy's style sometimes is. I'm not really sure what I meant by that when I wrote it in my notes, to be honest, but yeah, it's a really good looking book, and the character work when it happens, you know, the characterization when it happens is really, really effective. Anyway, I've been reading a lot of a comic called Dungeon, which I will want to talk about at some point. That's a European comic that I've been, I've had the books there and I've been wanting to get to for a really long time, and I got a couple of books over Christmas, so I've been sort of leafing through those rather than reading that much current stuff, but I think that's probably for a bit later. I want to talk to James about that at some point, actually, because it captures a lot of the things that I think he likes about Euro comics and Sergio Aragonés as well. So but I think that's it. I think that's it for this week, and it's so late. I'm really, really sorry about that. Whatever my apologies are worth at this point, I seem to do it quite a lot when I'm podcasting. As I said, you can listen to the podcast, to all of the previous episodes of the podcast at wehaveissues.net. You can talk to the podcast on Twitter at IssuesPod, or me on Twitter at NixSight, NixSight. And there's a page on Facebook, and you can rate and review us at your podcatcher of choice. And thank you for listening. I'm out.